50% of sexual assault in elderly leads to death within 1 year. It is not only based on the psychological harm of being sexually assaulted, but also the physical side of them possibly having injuries, infections. 50% are passing within the 1 year, which is leading to wrongful death.
Hey there, welcome back to the Nursing Home Abuse Podcast. My name is Rob. I will be your host for this episode. Today we are talking about the sad fact of sexual assault in nursing homes, how they happen, how we can prevent them. But we're not doing that alone. We have Patrick Stonick on the show to discuss this topic with us. All right. But before we get into that, everybody, it is time now for the nursing home regulation question of the week. And it's also another opportunity for you to win a Nursing Home Abuse Podcast coffee mug. It is the perfect reservoir for your morning hot cup of joe. How do you win this? It's not that easy, but here's how. You're going to go to our TikTok, which is at Justice for Residents, and you're going to look for a thumbnail with a little cartoon guy on it that has a green mask. That is Beachhead. He is the official Army Ranger of the G.I. Joe team. Some would say that he's fourth in the line of succession of command of G.I. Joe. But that's, again, that's debatable. But you're going to look for Beachhead. And then once you find him, click on it. And in the comments, you're going to comment your answer to the question of the week, along with your favorite Marvel superhero. So my favorite Marvel superhero is Beachhead. He's a member of G.I. Joe. You might have thought it might have been Captain America or Thor. I grew up reading G.I. Joe comics, not necessarily the greater Marvel comics or the Marvel Cinematic Universe. I'm a G.I. Joe guy from back in the day, and that's why Beachhead is my favorite. But anyway, the question of the week will be posted every Monday, and that's the one you're going to want to comment to enter, so stay tuned. One lucky winner will be randomly selected each week, but who are we kidding? No one enters this. If you comment anything, you probably will win. So please try to participate. You're the glorious prize ships at the end of the month, so don't miss your chance. The winner, did I say this? The winners are announced every Sunday on TikTok and at our website, shingfirm.com. I think it's /podcast. And then, all right, now time for the question. Under 42 CFR 483.21B1IV, so that's Roman numeral 4, what must be included in the resident's care plan regarding potential for discharge? Is it A, resident's desire to return or not return to community, B, resident's family's plans for housing the residents post-discharge, or C, the resident's selection for post-discharge housing? And that answer is A. The nursing home must assess and plan for whether or not the resident is intending to leave the nursing home. All right, folks. And with that, it's time to get into the substance of the episode. As I mentioned, we're talking about sexual assault in nursing homes, how we can prevent it, how we can know that it happened. But we're not doing that alone. We have Patrick Stonick joining us today to share his knowledge. Patrick began his nursing career at Thomas Jefferson University Hospital, later transitioning to home health and hospice care. He founded and operated a Medicare agency for 18 years, serving patients across 6 Pennsylvania counties. Now, as program director for On Point Legal Nurse Consulting, he coordinates litigation support for attorneys nationwide and serves as an expert witness in home health, hospice, and long-term care cases. And if you're an attorney listening to this and you do nursing home work, then you're certainly familiar with On Point Legal Nurse Consulting. In the past, used them. These guys are pretty prolific in the nursing home industry. But I digress. Patrick, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much, Rob. Thanks for having me.
Well, I mean, it's a pretty hardcore topic. So I guess, you know, to kind of get into it, it's how common in your experience is sexual assault in nursing homes, and kind of typically in your experience, who are the perpetrators and who are the victims?
Well, it is a tough topic, and it has been, in my experience, I've seen a very large increase of cases that not only I reviewed or have heard about with other experts and attorneys. There has been a big increase of sexual assault, specifically in skilled nursing facilities. It's a tough population in skilled nursing facilities, of course. I pulled some numbers and from the Ombudsman report that came out in 2023, there's been a 60% increase since the last report of 2017 of reporting. Of course, some of the biggest issues in skilled nursing facilities is the availability of individuals able to report exactly what happened.
I see. I see. And I guess it's either going to be that the perpetrator and that term is not apt if it's another resident, or it could be an employee or somebody outside of the facility that happens to come in there.
Correct.
In your experience, is it kind of even amount, or are you seeing a trend more towards resident upon resident or employee upon resident?
Based off the setting, most skilled nursing facilities, it is caregiver to the resident. The statistic is about 80% of these reported events are coming directly from caregivers. There has been increases more in memory care units that I've seen, to where it's patient to patient or resident to resident, for assault. I have seen it, a few have come across my desk of actually family members, which is also an issue. Also, loved ones, to where if it's two dementia patients, and they're not having the ability to consent or properly consent for, even if it's with their loved one, that's been an increase, and that's been a concern that I've seen.
What are some of the warning signs that a resident has suffered from some type of sexual assault?
The most obvious would be, of course, bruising. If there's any bruising in their genital areas, bruising on their upper arms, their wrists, their ankles, there can be injury like pelvic fractures. If an individual is very frail, they're more susceptible to breakage or injuries. There can be a lot of withdrawn. They become less active with their activities, something that has changed from their normal kind of day-to-day life. So they might not participate in activities. Their food intake might go down or not want to participate in meals. And they can just have a withdrawn effect that is different from what they normally were. The other side is that of that is I've seen an increase of sexual behavior. So they weren't and that wasn't their typical. So it's a big change that they are kind of oversexed, and that is can be a red flag that should be looked into. The other side is sexually transmitted diseases. That is still something that can happen at any age. And of course, if something like that comes up, that needs to be investigated immediately.
Speaking of investigations, so let's say that you have a loved one, and they're starting to show some of the signs that you mentioned. Kind of what would be the next steps that they would need to take?
Definitely call the Ombudsman. That needs to be reported. Call the Department of Health or the Department of Health and Human Services. That needs to be reported. The police should be involved if there's a suspected abuse. And of course, the facility, they need to be involved immediately because they need to take measures right away to protect the resident, protect the other residents. If it's someone coming from the outside, coming into the facility, or if it's someone within the facility, they need to all be notified immediately. Depending on the investigation, there's a group of specially trained nurses called SANE nurses, which are sexual assault nurse examiners. They're highly trained individuals to do these evaluations and assessments properly, making sure they're retaining the information and all of the everything that they need to put their investigation together if it moves to that point. So a SANE nurse would be must be involved or should be involved, I should say.
So from a prevention standpoint, what are some of the things that a nursing home can do to reduce the probability that a resident will be a victim of sexual assault?
Well, coming from, as a nurse myself, we left is education and training. So we have to constantly educate and we have to constantly train our staff for the signs and symptoms of sexual assault. So if they see bruising or they see a changing condition with the resident that's outside anything else that's going on with them medically, That's continuous education, continuous training. As far as the facility is concerned, they need to have some policies in place, and I've seen it an increase of it. They're checking other residents in the building for background checks, so making sure other residents are not on the National Sex Offender List, which is a free search that they can look. That should be part of their admission process. The other part is doing ongoing background checks for staff members. Most of the requirements is they're done on hire, a background check. More states are starting to change to where that's done annually, but some states still have it on hire and orientation, and then it's up to the staff member to report. I have this now on my record and report that. So it's basically a self-reporting, which in my experience doesn't happen too often, to where they're not reporting to their supervisors that they have a new offense. So I think facilities need to get a little bit more stringent with background checks of other residents in the facility and ongoing education to the staff.
I know that in Georgia, assisted living facilities and personal care homes, which are regulated by the state of Georgia, not federally, are required to do some level of background check of the residents themselves. However, as you mentioned, there's not a federal regulation that I know of, and I'm not familiar with any state that requires any back requires the background check of residents. Although it may exist out there. I think that is something, and but at the on the on the on the flip side of that, though, there are so many residents coming in and out of nursing homes that that little extra bit of background might, background checking might cost, the nursing homes a certain amount, and you have to talk about what's the cost benefit. Of course, we don't want anybody sexually assaulted, but at the same time, I'm sure that would be an onerous task. So,
True, it is tough, and it's time consuming. I think that it could also be something if there's going back to the education and the re-education and training for the staff members to see these red flags, if you will, then initiating kind of we need to start doing some spot checks. I know that could be troublesome as well because then there could be targeting certain individuals. It could also be, when a family member is researching if they're what skilled nursing facility they might be going into or a loved one going into, the family members can certainly do a search of, obviously not a specific person, but they can do a search for the sex offenders in that area. It gets a little granular to, specific zip codes and towns and things like that. So they could, see, it could certainly give you a little caution and then maybe ask some questions after that. And then ask the facility, do you do background checks of not only the staff, of course, and how often, but other residents in the facility, are they ever checked?
So tell me about the kind of what would trigger a assessment of an individual who previously either they didn't do a background, they're talking about a resident who previously didn't did like they didn't either they either didn't do a background check or maybe the background check came up no history, right? What are some of the things that might happen that would say, hey, let's perhaps reevaluate whether or not this individual is safe to be here because he might have a propensity to assault other residents?
No, it's a good question. I would say the keeping a good log of activity within the building. So asking staff members from top to bottom, if a resident is wandering around more into other individuals' rooms, if they're visiting people that they've technically never had an association with, and there's a new relationship, if they're those are types of things, like almost keeping a diary of kind of the activities that again would be different than their norm, not just normal visiting and socializing, because that's extremely important, of course, in skilled nursing facilities. But something that just seems odd, seems a little different. If they're closing the door every time they're going into another resident's room, they're always asking for extended privacy. That just seems a little bit outside their normal kind of day to day, is something that I would say is can trigger that. It's again, it's a change in their normal condition, so it's a change in their normal day to day. And if it's a simple, kind of watching and seeing what's happening and then interviewing and not accusing right away, but interviewing the resident to kind of see what's going on, it can kind of dictate your next steps. Of course, they have the right to have relationships and facilities. The other thing is the facility should be notifying the families if there is a new relationship with another resident, resident to resident in the facility. I've seen several cases to where the family's never been notified that, you know, your mom has a new friend and they've been, supposedly they're dating. That's something that should be, you know, with privacy, of course, but that could be, that needs to be relayed back to the family. And I've seen facilities implement new consensual consents that if they have dementia or they have some cognitive impairment, that there's almost a consent process to, are you consenting to have this relationship? Which really is, it's awkward. I will say that. It's not the easiest conversation to have, but it's really kind of putting everyone on the up and up, knowing exactly what's going on.
Talk more about that. I don't think I'm familiar with that process.
There's it was in Pennsylvania. That's where I'm from. So there was a there were skilled nursing facilities and assisted living facilities. So there's more interaction with other residents in assisted living facilities, and it was, you know, basically give consent to a sexual relationship with another resident, and is the individual that is consenting able to understand what's happening, what they might be doing, and who it's with? Both families were notified of this, you know, the want of these two residents, and they had more of a case conference to discuss. And based off of the evaluation and the assessment, the nurses were there, both family members were there. And the individual consented to, she understood, and he understood what was could possibly happen. So it was really more of education and understanding that they were cognitively aware of this consent process.
Sure.
So it was constantly updated. It wasn't a one-time thing. And it was based off of their assessment, their cognitive deficits, and if they were capable of understanding what was happening.
You had mentioned a second ago about there being like a sex offender list and, you know, trying to cross-reference residents potentially about this and the feasibility of that. But I wonder what the, if we could magically have the statistic, what the statistic is with respect to the number of sexual assaults that happen in nursing homes by residents that have a background in it, that have a history of sex offense versus not. To such the extent that if it's even warrants the background check. As I'm saying this, I almost sound like I'm against background checks, but I'm not. I promise. I'm just kind of thinking out loud.
But, no, I understand what you're saying.
Yeah. But clearly, background checks for the employees or the actual caregivers, whether they're temp or what, 100%, and that's required under federal and most states anyway. But yeah, it's a tough. It's a tough issue for the residents coming in there, but
it is tough. And it would be a wonderful, a fascinating statistic to see what that is. It hasn't come across my desk at all. You know, the other thing with background checks is they're not the update of background checks and the offenses, it's not instant. So there's been cases to where even nurses have gone state to state and they're in one state over and the next state doesn't know. So, you know, not only just doing state background checks in your county, but also doing federal background checks, but that also, you know, that costs a lot of money as well. So it's not an easy, there's not an easy answer. And the unfortunately, our systems don't update immediately or instantly. So there's always a lag between, you know, if people are traveling around, and that's something that probably should be a little faster in these days.
Exactly. Exactly.
So one of the interesting statistics that I came across was they said, and this again was from a study from the Ombudsman Association, 50% of sexual assault in elderly leads to death within 1 year. They're saying that it is not only based of a psychological, so the psychological harm of being sexually assaulted, but also the physical side of them possibly having injuries, infections, and there's 50% are passing within the 1 year, which is leading to wrongful death. You know, the facilities do have a responsibility to protect residents, and I thought that was something that I've never seen before in my research.
That puts it into a different perspective. It makes it more of a grave issue, more of a critical thing that needs to be addressed.
Yeah, and one of the biggest things is, you know, is believing the residents that when they say something happened or something's wrong, that's one of a lot of the cases that I've seen, and talking with my nursing friends that work in facilities, you have to believe the resident. I mean, you have to believe that something happened. And again, going back to the population, it can be end stage dementia, Alzheimer's residents. They still need to be believed and understood what possibly happened in the situation. And a lot of times it's ignored, or they're saying, you know, she has dementia. She doesn't know what she's talking about, or he doesn't know what he's talking about. And this happens both with men and females in facilities. So there's, you know, not identifying that an act actually could have occurred is no one's going to report it. And then unfortunately, bad things are going to continue to happen if we're not believing patients.
Well said. Well, Patrick, we really appreciate you coming on the show and sharing your knowledge with us today.
Of course. Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Well, folks, I hope that you found this episode educational. If you have an idea for a topic that you would like for me to talk about, please let me know. If you have an idea for a guest that you would like for me to talk to, please let me know that as well. New episodes of the Nursing Home Abuse Podcast come out every single Monday. And again, by all means, please be sure to participate in our weekly question of the week Nursing Home Abuse Podcast coffee mug. At this point in time, if you even think about participating, the chances of you winning are very, very high, probably 100%. So be sure to find our TikTok at Justice for Residents. Enter to win. You'll probably win. And with that, folks, we'll see you next week. Thanks for tuning in to the Nursing Home Abuse Podcast. Nothing said on this podcast, either by the host or the guest, should be construed as legal or medical advice, nor is intended to create an attorney-client relationship between the host or their guest and the listener. New episodes, for now, are available every other Monday on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or on your favorite podcast app, as well as on YouTube and our website, nursinghomeabusepodcast.com. Again, that's nursinghomeabusepodcast.com. See you next time.